Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 19. I think we start with text number 3. Just as a translation. Let me please your lordship by chanting the Bija mantra Omkara. Who's speaking here? Yes. Let me please your lordship by chanting the Bija mantra Omkara. I wish to offer my respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, who is among the most highly elevated personalities. Your lordship is the reservoir of all good qualities of Aryans, people who are advanced. Your character and behavior are always consistent, and you always control your senses and mind, acting just like an ordinary human being. You exhibit exemplary character to teach others how to behave. There is a touchstone that can be used to examine the quality of gold, but you are like a touchstone that can verify all good qualities. You are worshipped by the Brahmins, who are the foremost of all devotees. You, the Supreme Person, are the King of Kings, and therefore I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Text number 4. Is it possible to turn this light on? Oh. The construction? Yatad vishudan nubhava matram kekam. I didn't get much response. Yatad vishudanubhava matramekam. Actually, I have one of those too. Svatejasa dvasta gunavya vyastan. Pradya prasantam shudiyopalambanam. What is that called? Flashlight or something? Here's a flashlight. Aha. iPhone. Not all desires he fulfills. Only certain ones. Yanam rupam niraham prapadye. Yatad vishudan nubhava matramekam. Svatejasa dvasta gunavya vastam. Pritak prasantam shudiyo palambanam. Yanama rupam niraham prabhadye. Sadvasa guna vivastam. But yag prasantam shudityavanam. Yanam abrupam niraham prabhadye. Ladies. Yatad vishuddhanu bhava matramekam. Tejasadvasaguna vyavastam. Pradyak prasantam vishuddho pavlanam. Marupam niraham prabhadye. Yatad vishuddha nubhava matram naikam. Svatejasa dvasta gunabhya vyastitam. Pradyak prasantam viditam. Yanama rupam niraham prabhadye. Yat. Which. Tat. To that supreme truth. Vishuddha. Transcendentally pure, without contamination by material nature, anubhava, experience, matram, that satchit ananda transcendental body, ekam, the one, svatejasa, by his own spiritual potency, dvasta, vanquished, gunavyasvastam, the influence of the modes of material nature, pratyak, transcendental, not to be seen with material eyes, prasantam, undisturbed by material agitation. Shudhiya, by Krishna consciousness, or purified consciousness, uncontaminated by material desires, fruit of activities, and speculative philosophy. Upalambanam, who can be achieved? He, indeed, anama rupam, without a material name and form, niraham, without a material ego, prapadye, let me offer respectful obeisances. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord whose pure form, Satchitananda Vigraha, is uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, can be perceived by pure consciousness. In the Vedanta, He is described as being one without a second. Because of His spiritual potency, He is untouched by the contamination of material nature. And because He is not subjected to material vision, He is known as transcendental. He has no material activities, nor has He a material form or name. Only in pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness, can one perceive the transcendental form of the Lord. Let us be firmly fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, and let us offer respectful obeisances unto those transcendental lotus feet. Quite a long purport. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appears in various expansions as stated in the Brahma Samhita, 539. Ramadi Murti Shukalanya Mena Tishtan Nanavataram Akarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishnak Swayam Sambhavat Paramak Pumanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamahan Vajami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, who is always situated in various incarnations, such as Rama, Nishinha, and many sub incarnations as well, but who is the original personality of Godhead known as Krishna, and who incarnates personally also. Krishna, who is Vishnu Tattva, has expanded himself in many Vishnu forms, of which Lord Ramachandra is one. We know that the Vishnu Tattva is carried by the transcendental bird. What's his name? Anyone know what is the transcendental bird that carries Vishnu is? Garuda, yes. And is equipped with different kinds, types of weapons in four hands. Therefore, we may doubt whether Lord Ramachandra could be in the same category, since he was carried by? Who was he carried by? No one else. How many think Hanuman? Raise your hand if you think he's carried by Hanuman. Raise your hand if you have no idea who he's carried by. Well, you've learned something new today. The class is successful. He's carried by Hanuman, not by Garuda. And he had neither four hands nor a shankha, chakra, gada, and padma. Consequently, this verse clarifies that that Ramachandra is as good as Krishna, Ramadi Murti Shu Kala. Although Krishna is the original supreme personality of Godhead, Ramachandra is not different from him. Ramachandra is unaffected by the modes of material nature, and therefore he is prasanta, never disturbed by those modes. Unless one is saturated with love for God, the supreme personality of Godhead, one cannot appreciate the transcendental value of Lord Ramachandra. One cannot see him with material eyes, because demons like Ravana have no spiritual vision. They considered Lord Ramachandra an ordinary Kshatriya king. Ravana therefore attempted to kidnap Lord Ramachandra's eternal consort Sita Devi. Actually, however, Ravana could not carry off Sita Devi in her original form. As soon as she was touched by Ravana's hands, she gave him a material form, but she maintained her original form beyond his vision. Therefore, in this verse, the words pratya prasantam indicate that Lord Ramachandra and his potency, the goddess Sita, keep themselves aloof from the influence of the material energy. In the Upanishads, it is said, yam evaisha rinute tena labdhya. The Supreme Lord, Paramatma, the personality of Godhead, can be seen or perceived only by persons who are saturated with devotional service, as stated in the Brahma Samhita. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santak sadaiva ridayesha vilokayanti yam shaima sundarama chintya guna sarupam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of shaima sundara, situated within the heart of the devotee. Similarly, in the Chandogya Upanishad is stated, etas tishro devata anena jivena. In this verse of the Chandogya Upanishad, the word anena is used to distinguish the Atma and Paramatma as two separate identities. The word tishro devata indicate that the body of the living entity is made of the three material elements, fire, earth, and water. Although the Paramatma enters the heart of the Jivatma, was influenced and designated by a material body, the Paramatma has nothing to do with the Jivatma's body. Because the Paramatma has no material connections, he is described as Anama Rupam Niraham. The Paramatma has no material identity, whereas the Jivatma does. The Jivatma may introduce himself as an Indian, American, German, and so on, but Paramatma has no such material designations, and therefore he has no material name. The Jivatma is different from his name, but the Paramatma is not. His name and he himself are one and the same. This is the meaning of Niraham, which means without material designations. The word cannot possibly be twisted to mean that the Paramatma has no ahankara, no I-ness or identity. He has his transcendental identity as the Supreme. This is the explanation given by Srila Jiva Goswami, according to another interpretation given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Niraham means nir nischayena aham. Niraham does not mean that the Supreme Lord has no identity. Rather, the stress given by the word aham proves strongly that he does have his personal identity, because nir not only means negative, but also means strong ascertainment. Translation again. The Lord, whose pure form, Satchitananda Vigraha, is uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, can be perceived by pure consciousness. In Vedanta, he is described as being one without a second. Because of his spiritual potency, he is untouched by the contamination of material nature. And because he is not subjected to material vision, he is known as transcendental. He has no material activities, nor has he a material form or name. Only in pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness, can one perceive the transcendental form of the Lord. Let us be firmly fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, and let us offer respectful obeisances unto those transcendental lotus feet. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutve Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Namane Namaste Sarasvatunde Ve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shinivadi Paskya Dhyade Satarne. It may surprise people how often the same philosophy is repeated again and again and yet again and then again and again. As a matter of fact, most people think, oh, I read this so many times, I already heard this, so boring, simply the same thing again and again, that Krishna is a person. And what to speak of the fact that Krishna is a person, to hear again and again the fact that we're not this body, we think, I've already gone way beyond that. I just had an aspiring disciple write to me about the list, she's in Vrindavan, about the list of books that she's reading. Ujjvala Neelamani and Govinda Lilamrita and Bhagavad Gita was not included, which I'll suggest to her. Krishna begins the first instruction in Bhagavad Gita. Deno smita dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dahantara praptir diryas tatra namuyati. So the first part, deno smita dehe, we're all qualified to that. We're in a body that keeps on changing. And it's going from boyhood to youth to old age, and for ladies, girlhood to youth to old age. Krishna didn't say that, it would have added an extra verse to the Gita. 700 is an even number. And at the time of death, adhira, so here is a magic word, a person who's undisturbed, he's undisturbed by these changes. Now, even to understand or to realize that one verse can take many, many lifetimes. As soon as we've understood that one verse, then the result is we become prasanatma. We're always joyful. Not joyful for 10 seconds, a half an hour, a day, a week, one will be eternally joyful. So, if we're not eternally joyful, it means that we're in ignorance. We haven't even understood that we're not the body. Now, to understand we're not this body is not super advanced. It's only the liberation from material misconceptions, and then from there, then the actual conceptions, actual knowledge begins. In other words, to find out what we're not is not very advanced, because if we find out what we're not, we still don't even know who we are. So anyone who's puffed up thinking that they're very learned, they know so many things, but they don't know that they're not this body, they actually don't know anything of any real value to themselves. We may know technology, we may know so many different things about this material existence, but if we don't know we're not this body, then none of those things will actually do us any, have any value to us, ultimately, to our real self. So therefore Krishna speaks the entire Bhagavad Gita so that we can know the methodology of at least realizing the difference between ourselves and this body and the mind. How to purify our intelligence is what Krishna says principally, so that we don't identify ourselves with the false ego. Now, for the indirect process of realizing we're not this body is not very exciting. As a matter of fact, it's so unexciting that if we try it, we'd fall asleep. Prabhupada said he went by the Ganges and he was seeing the people meditating and they were practicing pranayama, and he demonstrated. He went so this is the pranayama practice by the aspiring yogis. Now, Bhagavad Gita gives us theoretical knowledge so that if we apply it, we can realize it. But Bhagavad Gita is principally aimed at teaching us how to engage in devotional service so that we can simultaneously realize Krishna along with Paramatma and along with our identity as a spiritual being. Which means, practically speaking, we have to engage in actual pure devotional service. Now, pure devotional service is actually within our realm of possibilities to engage in. And we should understand the difference between ordinary devotional service and pure devotional service. Ordinary devotional service is what the demigods engage in. In other words, they're serving Krishna, but they're sakama bhaktas. They have some material desire. Now, we ourselves are not going to claim that we're above the demigods, all those rotten demigods with all their material desires. Sometimes we hear Indra impeding the sacrifice of Prithu Maharaj and thinking, what a rascal this Indra is. Well, first of all, he'd be quite embarrassed. It'd be hard for him to go out and book distribution. Everyone would be looking at him. What happened to you? They'd have to cover his body completely. But, yeah, what would Indra do if he was in ISKCON? Well, probably the same thing all the rest of us are doing. He'd probably have more of a controlling attitude than most of us. He might be elected to the GBC if he qualified himself. In any case, Indra, Brahma stole Krishna's cowherd boys and the calves and hid them in a cave. What to speak of Chandra? But especially Indra, we find so many pastimes seducing sages' wives, creating a disturbance in Vrindavan. So they're sakama bhaktas, and they tend to get into difficulty sometimes. It's not that Indra is always in difficulty. He's just like, his whole life is just one mischievous activity after another. But these are many Indras over many millenniums, over many Brahmas, just to show us that even the demigods sometimes get themselves in difficulty. But it's not normal for a demigod to get themselves in difficulty. So Sakama Bhaktas, those who have material desires, those who want comfort, those who want freedom from distress, those who want to know how the material world works so they can live here more peacefully and help others live peacefully, and those who want liberation from all material misconceptions. We cannot claim that we're beyond that, but we can work beyond that. Wherever our present consciousness may be, we can work on a different platform. Therefore, it's advised, Ishvare tadadineshu palishetsu dvitsatsu cha prema maitri kripo peka yat karoti samadhi maha. For Ishvara, for Krishna, this prema. Now we may say that I have no prema. When I see the deities, my heart doesn't melt and I feel ecstasy, my hair stand on end. But we have to work for Krishna on the basis of prema. So what does that mean for us? Generally it means, as Krishna says, Shushusha Sharadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi. That we have to hear, our first business is to hear about Krishna. So that's love. We're hearing about someone we like. We don't hear about people we don't like, generally speaking. Even we hear about some things supposedly we don't like, it's because we actually like it, to hear about it. People like to hear about ghost stories. For instance, we may not personally know any ghosts, and we may not like ghosts, especially if they attack us. But we like to hear, some people like to hear about ghost stories, because they like to, this is called the ghastly rasa. So we have different rasas. We like to hear about different things, compassion, we like to hear about romance. These are all rasas. So we like to, also the ghastly rasa, the rasa of astonishment, fear, boo. People like, they especially like fear. People actually pay to go into a haunted house so they can become, so get the rasa of fear. As if we don't have enough fear. You need a little more rasa. But for Ishvara, prema principally means in the beginning, shradhanasya. We're hearing how to work in such a way and how to work with care, Prabhupada translates, with care and attention. So we may not be overflowing with love for Krishna, but if we work with care and attention, that's our preliminary manifestation of love, of prema. Srila Prabhupada once wrote me a letter. I sent him $50 for the book fund, because whatever money we got from selling the little blue Bhagavad Gita went to Srila Prabhupada's book fund, and I was the treasurer, so I sent the money. And Prabhupada wrote me back a letter, thank you very much for this contribution of love. So I was thinking, because I was pretty greedy at that time, trying to pay the bills of the temple, I was thinking that actually I didn't want to send the money. I was hoping we could utilize it to pay the bills, but anyhow, I sent it anyhow because that was my duty. But Prabhupada took it as a contribution of love. So just to do our duty in Krishna consciousness is with care and attention is the beginning manifestation of our love for Krishna. The smallest manifestation of prema is shraddha. Sad means the heart. When we even put our attention on Krishna, that's a manifestation of our love for Krishna. It may not be very intense, it may not be very consistent, but it's a manifestation of love. And it grows in the association of devotees, sadhu sangha, and further manifests itself in Bhajana Kriya, in the different phases of Bhajana Kriya, such as Utsahamayi, Niyamakshama, Ganatarala, Vishuddha Vikalpa, Vishama Sangara, Niyama Akshama, and Taranga Rangini. If you don't know what that means, then you should learn Sanskrit. I guess you probably won't learn Sanskrit, so. So Utsahamayi, puffed up with enthusiasm. Generally, people are not very conscious of their consciousness, where their consciousness is. Matter of fact, whatever they're thinking, they think is divine. They think it's me. If you love me, love my thoughts. But generally speaking, we're in the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Our pride is manifested in that we think that we're a great devotee, greater than all the other devotees. That doesn't go away so quickly. Thinking, utsahamai, puffed up, we enjoy our enthusiasm. See how enthusiastic, how loving, how devoted I am, how nice I am. Please respect and appreciate me, or else you're a demon. Utsahamai, niyagana, let's see, alternating thick and thin, that sometimes we're intensely engaged in devotional service, and the next moment we're slack. Then, Vishuddha Vikalpa, Vyuddha Vikalpa, war, excessive speculation, trying to decide what's good for ourselves, speculating, should I do this, should I do that, should I go there, should I go here? So much speculation. And if you don't believe me, just start chanting Hare Krishna and you'll see how much your mind speculates. Because generally speaking, we're unconscious, and when we start chanting Hare Krishna, we become a little conscious, we become aware of our mind, where it's going, and then we think, oh, this Hare Krishna mantra is disturbing my mind. No, we were just finding out that we have a mind. Otherwise, we're like a rock. A rock thinks it has a very peaceful mind because it's just unconscious. So when we're unconscious, we think everything's nice. But then when we chant Hare Krishna and become conscious, we realize how unconscious we are. So we're chanting Hare Krishna and the mind's speculating. I want this. No, I don't want it. Should I get married? No, should I take sannyas? Should I go to Vrindavan or should I go to Disneyland? Excessive speculation. And if you saw Vishaya Sangara, that trying to renounce things, and the more we become renounced, the more we become attached to them. In other words, when we artificially try to renounce things, just I want to give it up, then the more we think about giving it up, the more we become attached to it. If you wonder whether to make a donation or not, and you're just speculating about it, then after a while you start thinking, if I make a donation, what am I going to lose? And then we start thinking, well, I won't have that. And then you become more attached to the money than you were before you thought about giving a donation. Or you're fasting on Ekadasi, you're trying to renounce the food, and then you're thinking about food day and night, the whole day on Ekadasi. You're thinking about food. And then when it's time to break the fast, finally, everything tastes 100 times better. What a sacrifice I made. I can't believe it. No thought of Krishna, but one becomes attached more to prasad. And when one further purifies oneself, that no longer one is so much puffed up with one's thinking oneself to be pure, one realizes Ganatarala, that sometimes I'm not so steady, and then one realizes my mind, it's going all over the universe. And then one starts seeing renunciation is not so easy, that as soon as I think of giving things up, then immediately I become more attached. Like the brahmachari, the macho brahmachari, every time he sees one of the Matajis, he goes, he's usually the first one to get married. So excessive speculation, trying to renounce things, becoming more attached to them. Then, finally, one is able to become a little aloof from all this material consciousness. And one is able to remain somewhat, one focuses on sadhana, and then one tries to improve the sadhana. He vows, every day I'll get up at 2:30 in the morning, and he does that for a week and thinks, oh, just see, what time do you get up? I get up at 3. Wow. I knew it. Sense gratifier. And then with such a consciousness, and after, oh, what time is it? 3 o'clock. What happened? You didn't wake me up. Well, I thought you needed a little more rest, the mind tells you. And then 2:30 was ancient history. Now it's 3 o'clock. And then 3:30, and then 4 o'clock, then 4:30, oh, I'll go to Mangalarti tomorrow. It's always the same deities there anyhow. They won't miss me. So one is trying to improve one's regulations in devotional service, and it's difficult. One vows every day to follow certain principles, but every day one finds out that one is not so easy to be so regulated. And after some trials and tribulations and some practice, one becomes steady, and everyone looks at such a devotee. Oh, there is a real devotee. She's always at Mangalarti, always chanting their rounds, always going out on Bhuktisushan Harinam. They're a pure devotee, sing like an angel, dance like a Gandharva or something. So this is called, and one thinks, yes, I'm a great devotee. Everyone says so. I must be great. They couldn't be wrong. They're devotees. Devotees always tell the truth, and they say, I'm a great devotee, so it must be true. So this is called Taranga Rangini, enjoying the small waves of devotional service. And this is all part of Anishinata Bhajana Kriya. And then one realizes I'm just wasting my time. That I'm not this body. Everything related to this body has nothing to do with me. As long as I'm attached to this body, I'm going nowhere in devotional service. So then one starts with Anartha Nivritti. Or Anishinata Bhajana Kriya. Trying to avoid the offenses, the aparadhas, trying to chant Hare Krishna, and actually put Krishna in the center. That Krishna is the object, not me. We're trying to glorify Krishna. We're trying to serve Krishna. Not my material body. Not my material conceptions. Not my material false ego. Krishna should be in the center. So therefore one tries to chant Hare Krishna offenselessly. And that's quite an endeavor. But that's possible when Ishvara is the center. When we make devotional service, we put Ishvara in the center, and Ishvara is in the center when care and attention, we're trying to serve him. Either in the temple for the deities, therefore there are certain regulations for the deities. So to help us, do it with care and attention. So there's cleanliness, there's punctuality, there's reverence for the deity worship, so we can pay attention to Krishna, and we can do it carefully. And for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, somehow or another, tell people about Krishna. Especially Prabhupada emphasized book distribution, the holy name, and prasadam distribution. And what is my relationship with the other devotees? It's to cooperate with them, to serve Krishna in the temple, chanting together, hearing together, taking prasadam together, and going out and making, preaching also requires cooperation. Someone has to print the books. Someone has to bring the book, someone has to distribute the book, someone has to collect the Lakshmi and put it in the bank, so many things. Someone has to make the prasadam, someone has to distribute the prasadam, someone has to drive the car. It takes cooperation. And what is it for? To help innocent people come to the platform of gradually reviving their relationship with Krishna. We're not in the center. Krishna is in the center. We're not distributing books to compete with the other devotees to have the biggest score or to collect the money so that we can get something to eat. We're distributing the books so people can understand their relationship to Krishna. We're actually trying to help people wake up so they can love, understand and love Krishna. And for those we can help, we don't waste time trying to help them. You rascal, you better, you know, accept it. You're damaging my false ego. I'm a great preacher. You got to accept it. If you don't accept it, my position as Maharati will be in jeopardy. No, we avoid people we can't really help or don't want to be helped, actually averse to Krishna consciousness. When they hear the word of Krishna, the word Krishna, they become angry. They don't become happy. So we have to avoid dealing with them. So if we work in that way, we may be a completely new devotee, have no idea what this Utsahamayi is. We may not have any idea what Sadhu Sangha is. But if we try to work to please Krishna, cooperate with the devotees, try to help the innocent, and avoid the atheists, then we're working on the Madhyama Adhikari platform, and the result is that we'll become purified by such activity, because Krishna is in the center. Krishna is the purifying agent. If Krishna is there, everything becomes purified. And the more consistently Krishna is there, the more lovingly Krishna is there, then the more everything becomes purified by Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it's emphasized here that Krishna is a person. He's not just an idea. It's very hard to serve an idea consistently and lovingly. But Krishna is a personality, and he is a supreme person, and he has all good qualities, for instance, as mentioned here. And he's all-knowing. He's more conscious than we are of what we're doing, and we're conscious of what we're doing. Matter of fact, he's actually doing what we think we're doing. He's doing the whole thing, but we're desiring, and he's very much conscious of our desires. And if we desire to please him, to serve him, even in the smallest extent, then he becomes happy and reciprocates with us and helps us advance in devotional service. Therefore, we have to understand something about Krishna's personality, and then we might be interested in serving him. And as always emphasized here, we should be reluctant or cautious about identifying ourselves as Krishna. So we may think, well, that's pretty absurd. I never think myself as Krishna. Some people do. One time I was at a Sunday feast talking to one lady, and she was telling me how she has a deity of Krishna and how much she loves the deity. She worships it every day. And then finally she said, and one day I'm going to become the deity. So that's quite impressive. Most people don't think like that because they don't believe that they can become the deity. They don't really believe in the deity. But when we forget Krishna, then we start thinking ourselves to be the doer. And we start thinking ourselves part of this unit, this body that we have, we think we're the possessors, we're the doers. In other words, we've taken Krishna's place. And we may think, well, that's pretty innocent. I mean, I'm not trying to claim to be the Lord of the whole creation, just part of it. And by my plans, I'm just trying to increase it a little bit. So that's also kind of Maya. It is Maya, and whether we're conscious of it or not, we're taking the role of Paramatma to some degree or another. Therefore, this impersonalism is, and materialism is second nature to the conditioned soul, and they feel that's normal. That's the normal state of consciousness. Krishna consciousness is kind of weird. The normal state is to be the possessor and the enjoyer in the material world. And some people are other types of consciousness. Therefore, it has to be repeated again and again that Krishna is a person, he's Paramatma, we're not Paramatma, we're not Krishna, we're simply Krishna's servant. And after hearing enough times, we might think, well, maybe I should try it out and see what it's like to be Krishna's servant and see what happens. Make an experiment. And then Krishna can reciprocate with us much more than when we're in the mood. Because after all, since we're not the doer of the activities, ultimately we're the desirer. Krishna, everything, our mood, our desires, our attitude, our consciousness has everything to do with our relation with Krishna right now. So if we can change that and think in a different way, then Krishna can reciprocate with us in a different way. If we do the same thing every day, we have the same consciousness, then we can expect that Krishna is going to do the same thing with us and reciprocate with us in the same way every day. If we think every day I'm hearing this Bhagavatam, yeah, I know what they're going to say. You're not the body, right? Now they're going to tell me I'm not God. You know, I don't really have to go to the Bhagavatam class. I can just sit at my desk while I'm surfing the internet and review the whole Bhagavatam class. Yes, they're going to tell me today if I went there, I'm not the body. And they would have told me Krishna is God. Now I'm doing something more productive. I already know all these things. I don't know why they fill this book. I guess they needed more books to distribute. So they just filled the books again and again with the same thing. So now we have a lot of books with the same thing over and over and over again. No, actually it's explained in many, many different ways so that eventually we might catch up with what's actually being said in the Bhagavatam. And if we catch up, we might change our attitude a little bit and actually believe ourselves to be Krishna's servant, become aloof from what the results of my work are, from my material desires, from my false ego, and actually trying to do something to please Krishna and his devotees. And even the smallest desire, and even in that direction, Krishna becomes extremely pleased, and the reciprocation is so great just to encourage us to think more in that line. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
I have one specific question about Sometimes I find it difficult to collaborate in this Krishna consciousness movement in a more constructive, productive way, because I find the devotees sometimes hiding behind false ego. You know, I'm Grihastha, Asramacharya, Sannyasi, Book Distributor, Pujari, TP, GPC, whatever. So my question is this kind of ego trip really helping developing our Krishna consciousness, or should we somehow forget all these things and be more, personal to each other? That's my question.
Well, these designations are necessary. They're not arbitrary. They're given by Krishna. So they're designations for service. And although they may not help us, if we're identifying ourselves with them, they help others. Yes, they help others, because unless we have others to look to and see how to serve them appropriately, we won't know what to do. If men and women were all the same, there were no authorities, and everyone was like, even then we would have no idea how to relate to anyone. We'd never develop a service attitude towards anyone. We'd never be cautious in our relationships with others. Because we're not on the platform where we can just act as if we're liberated souls, because we're not. So these designations that others have are good for us, but we shouldn't identify with ourselves with the designations insofar as that we should believe that's who I am. We should know that this is the service I have, and therefore I should work appropriately according to that service. So even if you're a sannyasi, even if you're the temple president, if you're a grihastha, you have a service to do for Krishna. So you should know what the services are, what the duties are for that particular ashram or that particular duty. So that's also good, because then one works according to regulations and to serve Krishna.
I think I understand that designation should be there, and I accept that. But the point is that in the name of designation, we build up certain false ego, religious false ego, that it seems bring us to different direction.
Sometimes, but we shouldn't worry about it, about others. Just like someone, we may think this person's puffed up, they're lording it over me. So we should be happy that someone's helping me remember that I'm a servant to the Krishna's servants. So we should be very happy that Krishna has manifested himself in this way to help me become more of a servant. It may not be good for them, but for them, for their devotee, he sees the whole world is Krishna, is moving under Krishna's direction, and it's helping me become a better devotee. Now, if I have a position of a teacher, an authority over someone that they accept, then I, as Krishna may give me the intelligence to help modify their false ego so that it becomes more appropriate. But in general, if I'm not the authority of someone, then I should think, yes, I'm an eternal servant. If everyone has a big false ego trying to engage me in Krishna's service, that's very nice, because then I'll have to surrender more. And the more I surrender, the more Krishna will become pleased with me. If there was never any challenge to my false ego, I'd never make any advancement. If everyone treated me all the time as if I was God, then after a while I think I was God. But if they treat me like I'm a servant of God, then after a while I'll believe I am a servant. If I act like that, then Krishna will reveal it to me. So the bigger the test, the bigger the mercy is. I remember one time one of our senior devotees asked me to go to a place I didn't want to go. And I knew he did it only because he wanted to get some benefit from it. So I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, oh, my mind, I was speculating back and forth whether I should go. And then finally I thought, well, if I go to please Prabhupada, then Prabhupada would be very pleased, and that would be very auspicious. So then I said, all right, I'll go. And I went there. It was like thousands of miles away. And I stayed there, and I got more mercy there than I got any other place. And I realized it was only because I had surrendered that I decided that in spite of the fact that I was always fighting with this particular devotee, our false egos were sometimes in conflict, but because I surrendered to please Prabhupada, therefore Krishna decided to give me more mercy there than anywhere else. It wasn't because it was a particular place or I had a particular talent. It was because I finally had surrendered a little bit. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.